Hello, if you just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch. Tackling your questions in studio this evening, Ricus Reeders from PSG Wealth and Nick Norman-Smith from Lentis Asset Management. Don't forget to send those questions through to us, SMS 41392, or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Evening, gents. Thanks for joining us on the desk. A green day. Resi and Fit and India up 0.6, Toppy up 0.8, Finney up 1.1, ZAR just over 14, went to 13.92 at a point in time. Is this my center rally, or?
Yeah, I mean, also the rand is also a slightly weaker dollar, so yeah. A little bit concerned about the dollar, which has obviously been on a tear for the last decade, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much.
So probably a bit more than that than anything South African specific.
Results coming galore, Netcare, Pioneer Food Group, Invicta, any of them stand out? Astral Foods, I mean, some of them, for example, Astral, great set of numbers, but the maze of anything has bottomed, and as you know, rumors of drought next year are true.
Yeah, then that's a problem, and as they also warn in their statement, there's various factors, both positive and negative, that can affected, which is not unusual for a chicken company, but still very, very well-run business, and specifically the last set of results, very good. So, I mean, at current valuations and current dividend yield, you know, if you don't mind the cyclical nature of the thing, I don't think it's expensive or anything like that. But again, it is the chicken business. I mean, they've just had bird flu or whatever in Europe, who says we aren't next. You know, something will always happen.
Yeah, so that helped. Bird flu and avian flu in Europe meant no imports into South Africa, which helped prices, etc. I mean, down to 180 from over 300. Is the market, A, priced in the results, and B, a possible increase in maize price for next year?
Yeah, this is a very cyclical business, and it can look dirt cheap and then suddenly look very expensive. So unsurprising to see those kind of price movements. You know, from a qualitative perspective, there are not a lot of barriers to entry in terms of the chicken business. Obviously, someone like Astral does have the scale, and that's obviously very, very popular. So if you are looking for a chicken business, someone like this is a decent one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've just got to understand where the industry is going, and there's always complaints about import substitution, and then they want tariffs. And you've got the maize price obviously feeding in, and they've got a feeds business as well. So a lot of moving parts. So certainly one you want to buy on valuations that don't look particularly cheap. So I would say I'm not sure it's as cheap as it looks on the surface, but it's not that expensive either. So not a bad option.
Invicta results, headline earnings per share, 2 cents. That is largely as a result of a rather large check they had to write to SARS. But even without that, would have been around $1.90 versus $2.27. Truthfully, and let's park the SARS. I mean, that's a management issue. From an operational perspective, Nick, I thought I would have expected a weaker set of results from them. I mean, it's tough out there.
Yeah, it is, and you know, obviously exposed to industrial sectors, agricultural sectors. So it's tough out there. Though obviously they represent some decent brands and relatively well-run business. So I think it's a case of there's a lot of negativity towards South African Inc. and South African focused businesses, although they do have obviously some international operations as well, and there's probably a bit of a negative halo effect with the Christa Visa link, you know, which was the other way around not too long ago, but that's the reality of where we are in the market.
Invicta, I mean, sub 30, I mean, if anything, it's just that chart looks ugly.
Let's not go to the chart, shall we? That definitely looks ugly, but obviously the other one that also came out was Barlow's. You know, at least there's an overlap in their business, and Barlow's pretty decent set of results as well. But again, if you take a look at what they say going on forward, I seriously wonder whether this isn't as good as it's going to be. We've got sanctions in Russia, and so forth. So, I think both of those businesses did as well and probably better than one would have expected. I'm just worried about, you know, what they're going to do for the next 6 to 12 months, to repeat that.
And I must say, so Barlow's have sold the Iberian business and they're sitting on some cash.
Yeah.
I didn't really like the comments from the chief executive saying he's given himself this time to find a deal, to buy us the...
Like in a hurry. Setting a deadline.
Yeah, it's like when you see these companies saying we're going to have 25% of our earnings offshore in the next year. that's just laying a trap for overpaying or pushing the deal. You should be doing the deals if the deals are there, yeah. Or you should be paying the money.
ARB Holdings.
So maybe the quote was wrong or something, but it just didn't leave me.
ARB Holdings sat on $300 million, which for them was big money for years and years. And the CEO kept him saying, "I'm waiting for the right deal. Until then, we take the interest. Thank you very much." And that's a fair point there. A lot of questions coming through around Aspen at current levels. Undoubtedly, at 400, you were shaking your head and thinking this thing is crazy. What about 160?
It's looking interesting. Yeah. It certainly is. It's still a very well-run business. It's pivoted a number of times in its life, you know, from the traditional generics through to the sort of contract manufacturing, distribution, buying all the Glaxo brands. And throughout a few of these periods, they've spent a lot of money investing in the new business, and their debt levels have got a little bit scary. And historically, they've managed to pull that back. And obviously, Stephen Saad hasn't turned into an idiot overnight. He's a very astute operator. Paying a relatively reasonable valuation. We just got to see if they can get those margins back up again. They've moved into new areas, we've just got to make sure that they can actually monetize the anaesthetists sort of area as much as you think. So anaesthetics appear on the surface to be a really good business to be in, but if they can, you know, if they can monetize those drugs as well, quite a big move into China. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of uncertainty, and again, a lot of negativity in the market saying, "Oh, this was the golden child and the amazing South African business, and we look at how many your MTNs and your Steinhoffs and et cetera, all coming under pressure." You can see why the market's a little bit iffy. But I think the valuation is pricing quite bad news going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably not going to see the 30-40% annualized HEPS growth again, but on, you know, low double-digit PE, we don't need to.
I think it's a classic, it's not maybe deep value yet, but it's not the growth stock anymore, and it's sort of sitting in that in-between place, and that's not a bad place to be in from an investor perspective.
Maturing business in a sense, I suppose.
Yeah.
Rick, is your take on it?
Yeah, I've been favouring Adcock while this whole Aspen thing was going on, and so I'm still with Adcock in at least that's a turnaround that's working. Considering where they were. With Aspen, I agree with Nick. I mean, on the face of it, at a pretty decent valuation, but there's still a lot of results that need to come through before I'm absolutely convinced, okay, you know, this is, as you said, maybe not the growth stock that it was, but, you know, getting cash flow back, margins back, debt less, or debt off. So who knows? 2-3 years from now, this might seem like a bargain, but... maybe I'm just a little bit too.
Look, your Adcocks are going to have a bumper season because the amount of OTC drugs I've bought in the last week, and 201.
You and me both.
They are Adcock. Those have got that area sewn up. Imperial, we've got the unbundling. It's this week, I think, than Motus, whatever it is. Would you be holding through the unbundling? If you've got, do you keep both, either, neither?
I don't have Imperial, so I can't really comment on that. But if one takes a look at the Barlow's result, what they were saying about their rental part of things, it doesn't give me a great feeling about Imperial. So I can't really comment on the unbundling, and I'm certainly not holding Imperial at the moment.
Yeah, these unbundlings, certainly with the kind of businesses that you're seeing between the two, now you've got a sort of competitor to CMH directly, which is quite nice.
Which is nice.
And it's a good, you know, logistics can be a tough business, but it's a good logistics business. It's got some specialized areas. It's got some offshore exposure.
Yeah, the Australian acquisition, that was a good deal. One of the few that South Africans have done in Aussie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I think it's a relatively well-run business, and the valuation is obviously a lot more attractive than it was a while ago. Not that confusing, given again the negativity towards SA Inc. stocks. Although this is not a purely South African play, certainly not the logistics part.
Question coming through around Brait, results out last week. We understand the new Lokoro story they've pulled from China. Is the worst behind them? How much is that Christa Visa halo you referred to earlier, which has now become unhaloed, for want of a phrase?
Yeah, looking at the underlying businesses, one would believe that the worst is probably over. You know, there were some actions in the previous set of results with loans and deals and being transferred between entities, which again, given the current environment, didn't leave one particularly comfortable. But yeah, it owns assets in areas that are under a lot of pressure. UK and South Africa.
Yeah. So pick your two markets.
Eh? Yeah, so you know that's potentially a good time to be buying assets.
We'll take a break.
I think if you separate it into its various different businesses, mm-hmm. I think then one can go and take a look, whether it be in the UK or here, similar type of businesses that are not under the bright cloud, which are also cheap. So as an entity, I think it's far better to, you know, if you like some of the businesses, go and take a look, make a comparison and go there, rather than go and buy bright.
Before we head to break, a question coming through both in email and on my Twitter earlier today. Capco into Hammerson, Brexit seemingly happening. It's not looking pretty. Theresa May looks like she might survive, although who knows in politics, nights can be long. Are they attractive? Are you staying away? Are you saying the worst is in?
Yeah, trying to predict what's going to happen, Brexit, who knows? You can get UK property in kind of in other ways, I guess, as well. Mm. Some of the retailers we've talked about, something like a Sainsbury, which had a nice property underpinned with the corporate action, the discount's kind of gone there to a certain extent. I think there's better, mall-related opportunities elsewhere. So it's a nice place to be bottom fishing because there's obviously a large amount of negativity towards those. Tradehold's an interesting one that owns some UK retail as well, but you know we invested, for example, in Macy's, which owns a lot of more related stores and property within the US. But again, profitable retail business, and you get the sort of property for free. So I think there are more interesting ways of you know getting exposure to underlying property.
Rick, just quickly before we go to break.
Similar to Nick there, in other words, the UK is such an uncertainty at the moment that you might be lucky or not, depending on what
almost
the outcome
binary.
Is. Into March, yeah, yeah. And we're heading into the silly season. I don't think it's time to have bets on the table.
Look, from a valuation perspective, they are at least trading at relatively decent discounts to NAV. Whether those NAVs hold and what happens to the debt covenants if they don't hold, as we saw in 2009, time will tell. But it's not the crazy season of what we saw a year or two ago in South Africa with these massive premiums to NAV, which is clearly unwound.
Which is unwound quite markedly. Time for a break. Keep sending through questions. SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Right back after this. Welcome back. Let's take a look at how international markets are performing. Across in the US, massive selling pressure again. S&P 500 down almost 1 2/3%. The tech-heavy Nasdaq 2.5% down, and the Dow Jones off 1.5%. Europe was not much better. It was red across the board, although the falls were smaller. FTSE 100 off a fifth. CAC around 40 out of Paris, France, or 0.4%, and the DAX almost a full percent in the red there. Still with me, Rikus Reuters from PSG Wealth and Nick Norman Smith from Lentis Asset Management. Jen's questions coming through plenty. Impala Platinum, rather, sudden turnaround in sentiment. If I remember correctly, there was a time when you quite liked the Platinum players.
It's certainly the cheapest. So if you want to look at the players, Amplats has been the best run, and relatively speaking, performed really well this year. Mm-hmm. Amplats was under more pressure because from a qualitative perspective, they just weren't getting things right, and they continuously didn't get things right. And obviously, in a tough environment, that can really hurt you. So it's more a bit of a re-rating back. You know, if you look at the share prices, it was like Amplats and Implats were operating in different industries. and so I think it just got too cheap. So now the market is bidding it back up again. Maybe they're looking at Amplats and seeing what can happen.
What can happen there.
Precisely that. I think that whole platinum sector has been, to me, quite a surprise over the past 12 months. Amplats have done very well. Implats is catching up. Royal Buffer King, Northern maybe next. Momentum-wise, they all seem pretty positive. Whether that's because there's a perception that there might be a bit of switching between rhodium and platinum as far as catalysts are concerned, that might be cause of it. But that whole sector actually looks pretty good, despite all the negative news surrounding it at the moment. Maybe it's a bit forward-looking. So, yeah, I think Implats has had his little short-term run. I had a target of about 33 Rand on it. I think they're pretty close to that. But all the platinum counters seem to be in play at the moment.
Buy cheap companies, you eventually get good results, although it might be a little bit painful in between.
Interestingly, the
platinum price hasn't done
pressure. Yeah.
So, you know, they can sort of decouple.
They've been helped by a degree by palladium and rhodium, but they're producing platinum, whereas Russia's more your palladiums and rhodiums and the like. Naspas snuck out a trading update. They didn't sneak it out. They stuck it out full center at about 4:45. And that thing's got more different types of HEPs than I've had hot dinners this year. The one they always say, and to their credit, they always say focus on the core HEPs, which excludes non-recurring and non-operational items, looking chunky at 35 to 43. If you look at just HEPs, 7 to 13%. Moving parts.
So it's all irrelevant. Look at the 10 cent
price.
you know, place a fair value on the other areas. Look at the cash. Look at the debt. That's what it's about. So it's still a call on 10 cent. You can shout to the rooftops about how wonderful the classifieds business are, and there are some other businesses in there that are worth some decent money, but it all pales.
I mean, MultiChoice is probably a 50 billion rand business, but in Naspers, it's nothing.
It all pales into insignificance. So it doesn't really matter what. At these valuations, it's still about 10 cent. And on a positive side, 10 cent share prices come under a large amount of pressure. So it's a lot cheaper than it was.
Naspers. I mean, the 10 cent results were not bad, 24%. Gaming, obviously, we understood a disaster. They pulled some rabbits out of the hat, and they got some numbers going in their direction. Gaming will be back one day.
Yeah, it's not the first time the Chinese government has interfered in the business of Tencent. So they've always worked very well together when China or when the government says, please work with us. So it's still a huge cash generative business, and it's had a hiccup. Whether it's value at the moment, I don't know. I mean, there is some competition coming into the social media side. So let's stay with the trend on things and wait for that to turn. As far as Naspers is concerned, I don't know whether, you know, how much of it's almost private equity. In other words, what are they going to sell next for a profit, and how the operating business are going, which I don't think is going all that well. I'm a bit neutral on Naspers at the moment. I think in the sort of short term, you know, looking back 10, 12 months, they're on a downtrend. So not buying in at the moment, but so I'm stuck with a few of them and just seeing which way the next break goes.
I think the positive from the Tencent results was there's a lot of latent profitability, for example, monetizing WeChat and the advertising.
Which the sense was they hadn't been doing.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you can compare it to Facebook, and whether they're going to monetize as much as Facebook is unknown. But certainly that part of the advertising part certainly grew quite nicely, which was positive. But, I mean, we saw some numbers out of Alibaba, which were great. But their singles day sales growth was the slowest in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw results out of JD.com today, which were not bad. But again, revenues missed slightly. And they did mention the fact that the Chinese consumer is under some pressure. And they're quite a bellwether in terms of being a big ticket retailer. So, you know, when you're buying stocks that are pricing a lot of growth, it doesn't take too much negativity to hit the share price, in addition to the gaming issues and all those other issues. So it's just something to be aware of.
Yeah. No, I mean, as which happened with Aspen, I mean, it's that's different industry, same sort of story. Question through in the email line, or maybe the SMS. Capitec, best bank to own in South Africa, Rickus?
Oh, unfortunately, I cannot comment on that. Because
of course, Capitec, PSG, take it back.
But I have a smile on my face.
I mean, best model, best run. Been saying it for too long and been sadly wrong, but I don't know if it's pricing in any enough negativity to what we might see in
and it's another maturing. I mean, they've now got however many million customers. I mean, they're running out of runway for the easy growth. Now it gets the hard graft.
It's almost binary, unfortunately, with banks like this. So everything's great, until it's not. And when you see a massive amount of write-downs, because banks are geared institutions, it can go nasty very, very quickly. So whilst I don't wish it on current shareholders, I would love that to happen, because then I think you will get an opportunity to buy it. And I think it is a fantastic, you know, it's clearly a nice, clean model, a very well-run bank. But I'm not sure if you can completely, if you're that smart, that you can completely escape the underlying yes. environment that we're seeing. And if they can, wow, but I'm not sure
not,
many
not
companies
not going to be
can.
Easy. Question, any hope for Steinhoff? Any hope for Steinhoff?
Well, very smart new chief executive coming yeah. in. So, ex-lawyer, and he's obviously been fighting the good fight. Came in relatively, sort of right as the trouble came in. So, relatively clean of all of that. So, Ludi Preer, I think good news, the fact that he's been in there and is now staying on. So I think probably one of the better choices they could have made. So that's good. How much value is going to be retrieved out of there? I mean, he's not a magician either. So there's a lot of people queuing up to get a lot of money. So from a pricing perspective, I'm not sure. But yeah, certainly a positive announcement.
Yeah, it's not likely to survive. Mm-hmm. Quickly before we go to stock picks, Rickus, mine is out of favor. Do I sell or hold AECI and Glencore?
AECI I quite like as a SA Inc, and if we do get a bit of growth locally, AECI is one of the first that's going to benefit. The share price doesn't tell me that I've got to be buying it yet, but it's certainly on my screen. Glencore, I think, has got got sort of problems in the Congo that we all know about, and secondly, possibly not the biggest beneficiary from what's happening in China as far as resources and also environmental policy in China, which is directing resource growth to things which are not going to damage their environment, which might mean that you've got to ship from offshore. Glencore is the least beneficiary of that. So what I'm really saying is, of all the big mining houses, Glencore is probably not my pick at the moment, but that doesn't mean I'm negative on the more global mining houses.
Half a minute before stock picks, either of them attractive to you?
I think a lot of the easy money's been made in a lot of the resource companies. The end of 2015 wasn't too long ago.
Yeah.
So there still are inherent risks in those businesses, and there always will be. So I think you really want to buy when there's blood on the streets. But yeah, they're smart operators, but have they been too smart in some of the regions? Again, that's a risk one does need to factor in.
It's got to go to some stock picks. Nick, you're going with Viacom, NASDAQ listed.
Yeah, so this has been hurt by the whole cord cutting. So basically what Viacom do is they own Paramount Pictures, and they own MTV, VH1, comedy channels, and BET, so a number of those networks. So they actually they carry Trevor Noah's show, interestingly. So
yeah, comedy.
They make they're high quality content producers. They've turned MTV around. It's now a reality television show. It's no longer music. And they own Nickelodeon. So anyone with kids who's watched Paw Patrol and various others, that's what they do. So interestingly, with all of the vertical integration and deal making we've seen, as Disney and everyone tries to compete with Netflix, you're actually seeing less content available for newcomers like Facebook, like Netflix, and everyone else, because a lot of these companies like Disney are going to want to keep that content to themselves.
Yeah.
So it's going to be more expensive and tougher to get quality, well-known content. Viacom owns that content, and they're turning around the movie studio and monetizing better. So it's in the midst of a turnaround plan, one of the cheapest stocks in the U.S., and we think, and they've actually just done a deal with Netflix to make a whole lot of movies.
That's right.
And they've sold the content onto cell phone platforms. So actually the demand for quality content with the 4 billion cell phone handsets out there is actually going up, despite the fact that we've seen cord cutting. So all we're seeing is the distribution method is changing
in difference.
But people still want the content and will pay for that content.
New world for you, Rickus.
Yes. Nick was talking about tech shares pricing in future growth and then disappointing, and then the price falls out of bed. With New World, the market doesn't seem to be pricing in any growth whatsoever, which is ridiculous, because they grew at about 11% 12 months ago. They're sitting on a 4.8p, which means you're going to, earnings wise you're going to get that money back in about four
before Bafana win another game
if ever. So in other words, so it's incredibly cheap. Decent dividend yield. They're in white goods, which you think are under pressure over here, but they're also about 40% overseas. South America, emerging market, which I like. Australia, a little bit of a hiccup, but it's a 71-year-old company, and they've been consistently good managers of what they do. And I think at these prices, they're just incredibly cheap.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guests, Ricus Reuters from PSG Wealth, going with New World. Nick Norman-Smith from Lentis Asset Management, going with Viacom, listed on NASDAQ. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Till then, have a good evening. Got to go to some stock picks. Nick, you're going with Viacom, NASDAQ listed.
Yeah, so this has been hurt by the whole cord cutting. So basically what Viacom do is they own Paramount Pictures and they own MTV, VH1, comedy channels, and BET. So a number of those networks. So they actually they carry Trevor Noah's show. Interestingly, so
yeah,
they make they high quality content producers. They've turned MTV around. It's now a reality television show. It's no longer music, and they own Nickelodeon. So anyone with kids who's watched Paw Patrol and various others, that's what they do. So interestingly, with all of the vertical integration and deal making we've seen, as Disney and everyone tries to compete with Netflix, you're actually seeing less content available for newcomers like Facebook, like Netflix, and everyone else, because a lot of these companies like Disney are going to want to keep that content to themselves.
Yeah.
So it's going to be more expensive and tougher to get quality, well-known content. Viacom owns that content, and they're turning around the movie studio and monetizing better. So it's in the midst of a turnaround plan, one of the cheapest stocks in the U.S., and we think, you know, and they've actually just done a deal with Netflix to make a whole lot of movies.
That's right.
And they've sold the content onto cell phone platforms. So actually the demand for quality content with the 4 billion cell phone handsets out there is actually going up, despite the fact that we're seeing cord cutting. So all we're seeing is the distribution method is changing
in difference.
But people still want the content and will pay for that content.
New world for you, Ricus.
Yes. Nick was talking about tech shares pricing in future growth and then disappointing, and then the price falls out of bed. With New World, the market doesn't seem to be pricing in any growth whatsoever, which is ridiculous because they grew at about 11% 12 months ago. They're sitting on a 4.8p, which means you're going to, you know, earnings wise, you're going to get that money back in about four.
Before Bafana win another game.
If ever. So, in other words, so it's incredibly cheap. Decent dividend yield. They're in white goods, which you think are under pressure over here, but they're also about 40% overseas, South America, emerging market, which I like. Australia, a little bit of a hiccup, but it's a 71-year-old company, and they've been consistently good managers of what they do, and I think at these prices, they're just incredibly cheap.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guests, Ricus Reuters from PSG Wealth, going with New World. Nick Norman-Smith from Lentis Asset Management, going with Viacom, listed on NASDAQ. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Till then, have a good evening.